control over the water of the river, but he led them to our water. This is the akhlaq we can learn from Imam al-Husayn alayhi salam. We can see during history and the influences that he had in his speeches here and there, and his companions, and also some of the members of the army of the enemy that left the army and joined the camp of Imam al-Husayn alayhi salam. His interactions with Zuhair, you know, Zuhair ibn Ghain, you know, all of these beautiful examples of the lifestyle of the infallible Imams, Imam al-Husayn alayhi salam, show us that how much akhlaq and ma'naviyah, ethics and morality and also spirituality can sometimes help the human beings. But it needs practice, Brother Ali, doesn't it?
Sorry?
I mean, ethics and akhlaq needs practice.
Very true. Without practice, nothing actually, the result of it cannot be seen.
Okay.
So we need to first have a trainer, an ustad. We need to actually follow the instructions by a reliable and actually trusted ustad. Then out of, let's say, practices, inshallah, they will institutionalized in us, and we can, inshallah, become a practitioner.
Okay, that's right. And say they may raise me, especially for our kids and children, this akhlaqi education, because the parents are responsible for their ethical training. But I think it's very good to have one ustad, or we can say master of akhlaq, outside of the family to train the child, isn't it?
Well, I think it's not. I think it's personal. It's a personal view.
Okay.
I don't. Since I do homeschooling for my kids.
Oh, so you do homeschooling.
I personally don't think that you always need a person out of the family.
Okay.
If parents are good enough, you know, and they are, you know,
this is important.
Yeah, if they have trained, you know, good enough, then they can do it. They can do many of the things themselves. But of course, they can take examples from other scholars or, you know, and present them to the children in a good, you know, interesting manner so that they can understand them.
Yes.
But it's not like, it's not necessary, I think. Personally, I don't think it's very necessary.
Because sometimes the parents themselves
are the teacher.
In need. No, sometimes they are in need of akhlaqi points.
They do.
Okay.
Yeah, they do.
And they found themselves. I do want to say sometimes the akhlaq is, needs an expertise sometimes. Because we know that the parents nowadays, sometimes we can find in the Muslim lands too, are busy with their works. They have jobs outside. They do not have time to spend with the child, okay? So who's going to be responsible for the akhlaq of the child, of the kid in the house?
Yeah.
Okay, very good. You have a comment on that?
Yeah. Actually, for when we are talking about an akhlaqi trainer, it does not mean that all of the brothers or sisters who are listening to us need to go and find somebody to teach them to do this and to do that. This is the promise of God. In case we actually oblige ourselves towards whatever is haram and whatever is wajib, muharramat and wajibat, whatever is compulsory and whatever is prohibited, then Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, He will Himself pave the way for us to go towards other phases of that.
That's right.
As the brother said, this trainer is not necessarily, for example, an ustad from Hawza Almiya. No, it can be a person, for example, inside the family, a person, a good role model inside the family. It can be a mother or father. Whoever, for example, is more closer to this quite clear, let's say, instruction that we talked about, that is obliging ourselves towards performing wajibat, that is compulsory actions, and refraining from what is known to be prohibited actions.
Okay.
So it's I think a simple rule that brings us famous quote again is from Ayatollah Bajat, when he said that when you oblige yourself to these two actions, the rest will come to you. Allah will guide you by His own mercy to help you find the right way. Whether in the, let's say, words of a father or a mother, or for example, a spiritual star or trainer, or whoever, because you have started your moral education by refraining from whatever is prohibited and actually oblige you to do whatever is wajib and compulsory.
That's
so,
right.
Allah Subhanahu wa Taala, He will show us the way in case we become a bit strict on whatever He has asked us to do and He has asked us not to do.
That's all right. We cannot delete the role of spirituality in today's world. But the case, the important case is that nowadays, Sayyid Ayman, we see so many spiritual movements around the world. I think sometimes we confuse the concept of spirituality with tranquility. For example, these new movements, the spiritual movements that are happening, the meditation ones, the yogas, okay? These are very different from the akhlaq and the manaviyah that we are talking about. I think those movements are, again, concerned with the physical features of the human beings. I mean, at least it can bring kind of tranquility in your mind and mentality, and they call themselves the mental movements, but not the spirituality. What's your take on that, Bill?
Well, I think it's not exactly as you said. I think it's there are little bit differences. As yes. I followed one sadhu, you know sadhu?
No.
He's a
the Hindu
mentor.
One?
Yeah, Hindu one, yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah. Okay. So he has a YouTube channel.
Yes,
he,
yes.
You know, so I watched a few of his videos.
Okay.
So most of the videos, they had a common teachings.
Okay.
And they were guiding people towards this divine power.
Yes.
And, you know, but uncertain elements like were wrong, such as evolution.
Mm-hmm.
We don't believe in evolution, yes. And you know, so they had they brought this idea of evolution somehow.
Yes,
but still, I you know, as we all know that God has sent many prophets in all around the world, but unfortunately, what happened that all those teachings were hijacked
uh-huh.
by some people.
Yes.
They changed them into something different else.
Okay.
And now I think Hinduism is also very much related, you know, it's very close in its yes. teaching with Islam.
Yes.
Same as Christianity,
okay.
same as the Judaism.
Okay.
Yeah, they were all divine religions
yes.
initially.
Yes.
But they were all hijacked and they were tarifat, you know, they changed it. They changed their holy books
yes.
and brought us, you know, in front of people in a different way.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why we have this problem right now. But I think
okay.
you're right. There are some movements, some spiritual movements,
yes.
which are wrong.
Okay,
yeah.
That's all right.
Yeah.
That's all right. So the right path and the true path was shown to us through the Holy Quran, through the teachings of Prophet Muhammad and the Ahlul Bayt. But the only thing is that we have to practice it every day, on and on.
Mm.
And then this practice kind of makes us perfect. Practice makes perfect, as the English people say.
And moreover, brother, I have heard one of the instructions that one of the teachers
trainers.
Of Akhlaq, one of the teachers of Akhlaq said that alongside with whatever that is quite known in Hadith and in the conduct of Ahlul Bayt alayhi wasalam, that we have to oblige ourselves to wajibat, that is compulsory actions, and refraining from muharramat, that is prohibited actions.
Mm-hmm.
One more actually action helps us to, inshallah ta'ala, find our duties, spiritual duties,
yes.
and actually act upon that is recitation of the Holy Quran.
Okay.
Recitation of the Holy Quran, pondering on the verses of the Quran. Not necessarily all the verses that we recite every day, because we, as inshallah, a believer, need to recite at least 50 verses of the Holy Quran each day. But not all the verses. I'm pondering, let's say, focusing even on one single verse of the Holy Quran each day actually will open horizons of ma'rifah and knowledge and inshallah
yes.
and spirituality towards our heart, and it will revolutionize
That's
inshallah
right.
our life and our spiritual aspect.
That's right. Doing a salat on time and safeguarding our salat is also another important topic, you know, which is really important. As you said, recitation
mm-hmm.
of the Holy Quran can also help
because
us.
Again, in Quran,
I'm pondering upon
in
that.
In Quran, everything is there, because the salat that you are talking
yes.
is, again, in Quran,
yeah.
pondering in the verses of salat. Again, Ahlul
yes.
Bayt are in Quran.
Yes.
So we cannot actually
we cannot miss it.
Take,
that's right.
take out Ahlul Bayt from Quran. They are the whole Quran, most of the verses of the Holy Quran
mm-hmm.
actually are about the status and position of Ahlul Bayt alayhim salam. Everything is in Quran. The akhlaqiyat and al-ahkam, akhlaq, everything. Jurisprudence, our businesses, whatever we
transactions,
need in
that's
our
right. okay.
in daily lives are in Quran.
And the rulings are over there, but not the mere recitation and memorization of the Holy Quran can help us.
Exactly.
We have to practice them, we have to ponder upon them, and we have to apply them in our lives. This application is very important, because we have the theoretical aspect of the Holy Quran and the applied one.
Right.
What about the applied ones, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Theoretically, okay, we are good reciters, we are good memorizers of the Holy Quran, we send the kids to the school to memorize the whole Quran under, what, 12, okay, this is good. But what about practicing it in our lives? We have to practice it as the parents in the house. So then the Holy Quran is going to for sure help us, inshallah. Thank you very much.
Thanks to you, brother.
Brother Ali Alavian and Sayyid Ayman Rizvi. It was very kind of you. Nice elaboration on some of the main features of human beings as tackled by the leader of Iran, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei. And thank you much, dear listeners. This is Real Points. I'm Atan, the host of this program. For more information, visit our website at parstudio.com/Ian Call of Islam page, also a YouTube page and Instagram page, Call of Islam Radio. May Allah bless you all. Do not forget us in your du'as. Fi amanallah.
The same when I'm too concerned by what they say. Why should I wanna have you? To doubt you would be the worst mistake. Deep inside I know, amidst all the darkness and everything which makes no sense, I know that you exist. Guides me through my darkest nights, shows me right from wrong, a world that often lies. Cause I don't need anyone, anything in life but you. No, I don't need anyone to show me my way. No, I don't need anyone but you.
Around the World with Reporters.
The Secretary General of Lebanon's resistance movement, Hezbollah, said that the recent Israeli attack was a very dangerous development, which has not occurred in the last 15 years, stressing that the resistance needed to respond swiftly.
Our response was linked directly to the two incidents of Israeli Air Force attacks, which targeted Lebanese territory for the first time in 15 years. And our response had very clear tools and objectives. We calculated our moves very precisely. Our enemy and our friends said this. They said open territory. They did not target civilians. So we also targeted open areas with no civilians. But we had many options. We could hit open areas in Sheba Farms, in northern occupied Palestine, or the occupied Golan Heights.
Said Hassan Nasrallah made the remarks in a televised speech to commemorate the 15th anniversary of the 2006 war. He said that Israel deliberately targeted open areas in the middle of the night in order to terrorize civilians, and presumed that the resistance would not respond because of the various domestic problems inside Lebanon. Said Nasrallah stressed that the main deterrence for Israel is the capabilities of the resistance.
The enemy today is more fearful than any time in the past because of the developments in Palestine and the region and the transformations in the region and the ascending strength of the resistance and because of the deep internal divisions and the mutual hatred between the occupying Zionist groups. Facing their internal issues and the strengthening of the resistance, everyone in the Zionist entity is talking about an existential threat.
Experts believe the military potential of Hezbollah has created a balance of deterrence where Israel is incapable of even starting a war.
Israel wants Hezbollah to start the war. That situation will be different. Hezbollah is aware of this, will not Israel let him go to war, you know, anytime Israel wanted.
The leader of Lebanon's resistance noted that in any future confrontation, the Israeli military will disintegrate completely and would be heavily defeated. The 2006 war had settled a certain status quo, which remains until today, with a new regional equation, which comprises all the resistance groups in the region. Any miscalculation by the Israelis could be detrimental for Israel. Maryam Saleh, Beirut.
Visiting the famous Eiffel Tower in Paris has become more complicated than before. Now, people have to show an electronic document that proves that they are vaccinated twice. If not, they need to show a negative PCR test. However, most of the visitors do not consider this procedure as a problem.
It's a good opportunity to show that you're vaccinated. For me, this is perfect. This way, we are all sure that we are vaccinated.
I'm fine with it. I mean, if it lets us do things like this, then why not? To go back to some kind of normal, being able to spend time with our family, go on vacation, it's nice.
The same procedure is used to visit public places like the Louvre Museum. Rows are longer than usual because people have to show their pass.
I'm rather in favor of the health pass. If it is to protect everyone and to prevent the virus from spreading, that's better for everybody.
The French Parliament and Senate have voted this new law, and earlier this week, the Constitutional Council has approved the law text. The health pass will now be extended also to restaurants and trains. But protesters continue taking the streets. They were again tens of thousands in France and at least 2,000 in Paris. Why? Jerome Rodriguez, who lost his eye in a previous protest, organized this march. He explains that the problem is not the vaccination, but the limitation of liberties.
We are here to protest against the violation and decline of liberties in France. We are not here against the vaccines. The health pass is just one extra restrictive law after another. The first restrictive law was against the yellow vests, the second one about global security, and now the third with the health pass. Macron should take care of the poor people, not only of the rich companies who earned a lot of money during this COVID crisis.
The protesters are especially targeting the French government that is using force rather than persuasion to obtain a double vaccination of a large majority of the French. The reason is medical. Today, most of the people who arrive in hospitals with severe symptoms of the COVID-19 virus are not vaccinated. Most of the people who transmit the virus are not vaccinated either. Despite ongoing protests against the mandatory health pass, the majority of the French is bowing more and more to the medical evidence. Today, vaccination is the only efficient way to hold back the coronavirus. Chris Den Hont, Paris.
This is Pin Baldak, a Kiev-Ghan border crossing in southwest of Pakistan. North Taliban have shut it down, demanding Pakistan a visa-free movement of Afghan citizens. The complete closure of the border has suspended transportation of edible items and movement of thousands of people from both sides. The Taliban recaptured most of the border crossing with the neighboring countries of Afghanistan in an attempt to lay down a besiege of President Ashraf Ghani's beleaguered government in capital Kabul.
Islamabad has completed 90% of wide fence of nearly 2,700 kilometer long porous border with Afghanistan to contain the movement of terrorists sneaking into Pakistan to carry out terrorist attacks. If visa restriction is removed, Islamabad fears there would be more infiltration of terrorists into Pakistan. Therefore, the government here is unlikely to concede to the Taliban demand of a visa-free movement of Afghan citizens.
It's not a legitimate government who can come up with a legitimate demand, or where it can ask a relationship which is based state to state. It has to legitimize itself, it has to bring itself to an acceptable and internationally recognized position.
The Taliban claim to have recaptured 85% of Afghan territory, controlling over 260 districts, most of which after the withdrawal of US-led NATO forces. The clashes between the Taliban fighters and Afghan National Army have made thousands of families homeless, and many of them were caught in the crossfire, particularly in the southern parts of Afghanistan. The UN has warned an unfolding humanitarian crisis in Afghanistan.
The provincial capitals of Kandahar, Herat, and Lashkargah, in particular, have come under significant pressure. This is a clear attempt by the Taliban to seize urban centers with the force of arms.
The ongoing talks between Taliban and President Ashraf Ghani's government in Doha have so far failed to take off. Both sides remain glued to their respective demands, which has heightened the fear of Taliban overtaking rest of Afghanistan in near future. Javed Rana, Islamabad.
Tell Palestinian groups in the Gaza Strip hailed the Hezbollah's move to fire a barrage of rockets toward the Israeli regime in response to Thursday Israeli air raids on South Lebanon. Palestinians welcomed the move, describing it as a strong message to Israel.
The Lebanese rockets foiled Israeli plans and projects aimed at separating the resistance in the region. It proved that the resistance won't remain silent in the face of the Israeli crimes. The Lebanese response is a message that Israel cannot impose its policies in the region, and the resistance will keep defending its rights.
The Israeli military said its Iron Dome system intercepted 10 of 19 rockets on Friday, with six falling in open areas in a third day of tension across the borders. There have been no reports of casualties or serious damage. Palestinian groups expressed their support to all forms of resistance against Israel and announced their readiness to stand with the resistance movement in Lebanon in defending their rights.
We hail the response of the resistance in Lebanon against Israeli airstrikes. This Lebanese move emphasizes the importance of the resistance in defending its rights and foiling the Israeli policies. The Israeli regime is also still practicing all forms of violence against the Islamic and Arab nations, and the resistance is the only way to put an end to these crimes.
The resistance said it won't allow the Israeli regime to impose new policies in the region and that Israel won't go unpunished for its crimes.
We really welcome the Lebanese move to respond to the Israeli airstrikes in South Lebanon and fire rockets at the occupied territories. We stress that we are all united in resistance to liberating Palestine and getting the Israeli occupation away from the region. We are supporting our brothers in Lebanon, and we are all ready to defend any Israeli aggression against Lebanon.
Palestinian factions here welcome the Lebanese response against the Israeli attacks, stressing on fully supporting the resistance in Lebanon against the Israeli aggression with all means. Ruba Shavit, Gaza.
Lebanon's resistance movement Hezbollah says it has fired dozens of rockets near positions of Israeli occupation forces in the Shabaa farms. Hezbollah added that the latest round of rocket fire came in response to the Israeli air raids that hit South Lebanon on Thursday. In an interview with a local agency, Hezbollah's Deputy Secretary General Sheikh Naim Qasem stressed that the resistance is much more capable than it was in 2006, yet downplayed the possibility of an all-out war.
In this phase, the resistance is in an extremely high state of readiness, and it cannot even be compared to the level of capability and alertness which was present in 2006. Whether in the arms, preciseness, military planning, training, preparation, and capabilities. And Israel knows this. So if they launch a foolish aggression under any pretext, Hezbollah will be ready.
An Israeli military spokesman stressed that Israel does not wish to escalate to a full war, but is prepared for it. Experts believe Israel was trying to move escalation towards the inside of Lebanon, but the resistance took things back to square one.
The Israelis have been trying for a while to change the rules of engagement with Lebanon, but Hezbollah's resistance has proven today that the Israelis cannot change the status quo as long as there is a resistance which is ready to face the Israeli aggressions. This was not only retaliation to the latest round of Israeli shelling, it was also a warning and a response to all the violations committed by the Israelis, whether in the air, land, or sea.
Lebanese President Michel Aoun and Lebanese caretaker Prime Minister Hassan Diab urged the United Nations interim forces in Lebanon to put pressure on Israel to stop its aggressions against Lebanon's sovereignty. Several statements from Palestinian resistance groups were issued in support of Hezbollah's retaliation, which many see as stressing the full legitimacy of resistance groups to face occupation forces. With no civilian areas targeted from both sides, status quo seems to have remained unchanged. It's the first time the Israelis launched such an attack against Lebanon since the 2006 war, but it's also the first time since then that the Lebanese resistance retaliates with multiple rockets against an Israeli military occupation post. Maryam Saleh, Beirut.
Following a recent call by the Afghan president on the entire nation to establish a united national front against the Taliban, residents of many cities, including Kabul, have welcomed the call by different moves, such as taking to the streets to chant supportive slogans and joining local armed fronts across the country.
Rural people of Afghanistan widely welcome President Ghani's call for the establishment of a national front against the Taliban. We saw how rural people in Herat and other cities put their unity on show by chanting slogans in support of Afghan military forces. This shows that it is a real national uprising.
The entire nation knows that the Taliban have ruined the infrastructures. They are just after war and violence. So I strongly support Afghan national security and defense forces to stand against Taliban.
Afghan military forces say they are committed to strongly pound terrorists all over Afghanistan, mainly in southern Helmand province, thanks to strong support they are receiving from locals.
A report suggests that the shadow governor of Taliban for Helmand province and a number of top military commanders plus hundreds of them have so far been killed in attacks conducted by our forces. We will strongly pound anyone who stands against the nation, against the republic and the constitution. The Taliban must realize that we are committed to defend our land.
Referring to the recent war crimes committed by Taliban, locals here say, unlike the beliefs of U.S. Special Representative for Afghan Reconciliation Zalmay Khalilzad, who had said that Taliban has changed, the recent advances of Taliban proved that they are still following a dogmatic ideology. Some of the displaced Afghans accused Taliban militants of committing war crimes during their assaults on districts and provincial capitals over the recent month. They say the Taliban have killed civilians, used them as human shields, and destroyed their houses. The only way against the militants' violence, they say, is to resist. Sayed Amin Alami, Kabul.
Britain is known to be the hub of terrorist and corrupt fugitive political leaders fled from Pakistan. This is London residence of Altaf Hussain, a leader of Karachi-based ethnic political party. Back home, Hussain was convicted on terrorism and murder charges. Nonetheless, UK never handed him back to Pakistan of being what many believe an intelligence asset of British secret services. This is Ishaq Dar, the former finance minister who fled from Pakistan in 2018 to avert prosecution on money laundering charges. And here comes the former Prime Minister Nawaz Sharif, who has been staying in these luxurious flats, which judges back in Pakistan found were purchased with the looted public money. However, pressure from Islamabad has now compelled Britain to change its long-held pro-fugitive policy after London decided to expel Nawaz Sharif. His request to further stay in the UK was rejected by Britain. His Pakistani passport is already invalid after Islamabad refused to renew it.
The UK government has been under intense pressure, not only from Pakistan, but various other countries whose fugitive leaders have been living in UK for a long period of time. UK government was under great pressure and under great criticism. And that could be a reason that the UK government basically did not allow Nawaz Sharif to stay on or extend the visa of Nawaz Sharif to stay in UK.
Nawaz Sharif fled Pakistan after plundering public exchequer. He should now come back to Pakistan and must return the money he looted, and after this he can comfortably stay at his home in Pakistan.
Sharif was convicted and sentenced for 10 years on money laundering charges, but was released from jail in November 2019 only for medical treatment for a few weeks. However, since then he has been residing in London despite repeated court orders to return home to face trial of corruption cases. The former Prime Minister Nawaz Sharif is fast running out of his legal and political options after Britain decided to expel him. One of the choices, analysts believe, is to seek shelter in an Arab country after exhausting his all legal options to delay his expulsion from the UK. Javed Rana, Islamabad.
Pakistan's president, foreign minister and others joined this rally in support of the people of Kashmir.
The rallies were held in Pakistan to mark the second anniversary of India's, what Pakistan says, illegal move to revoke the special status of the disputed Kashmir region. India, on August 5, 2019, abrogated the Article 370 of the Indian Constitution that granted special status to the Jammu and Kashmir region. Pakistan rejected the move as a violation of the UN Security Council resolutions that seek a referendum to decide the final status of Jammu and Kashmir.
I want to assure my Kashmiri brothers that Pakistan will continue to support the people of Kashmir for their right to self-determination. We will continue to support Kashmiris till they get freedom.
Go India, go back!
Separately, Kashmiri leaders also took to the streets in Islamabad. The All Parties Hurriyat Conference staged a protest not far from the Indian High Commission in Islamabad.
We, the Kashmiris, not only in occupied Kashmir, Azad Kashmir, or in Pakistan, but over the world, where the Kashmiris are present, they are making this day as a black day. Why we are making this day as a black day? Because against the will and wish of the people of the Kashmir, India has abrogated its articles.
Protesters condemned the Indian policy towards Kashmir and vowed to continue their struggle until Kashmiris get their right to self-determination.
Kashmir is a disputed territory as per the United Nations resolutions. The resolutions have been passed and at the behest of the India. It was India who took the Kashmir dispute to the United Nations. And it is India, it is the then Prime Minister of India, Jawaharlal Nehru, who in his communique to Pakistan said, we do not believe in forced marriages, and Kashmiris will be given right to self-determination.
Kashmir remains at the heart of tensions between India and Pakistan. The dispute dates back to the partition of the subcontinent in 1947. Both countries have fought wars over the only Muslim-majority state controlled by India.
Tensions between India and Pakistan have further deepened since India revoked the special status of Kashmir. Pakistan insists India has to reverse the changes for any talks. India, however, is defending the changes, calling it as its internal matter, and hence the deadlock. Kamran Yusuf, Islamabad.
The brutal battle between Taliban and government forces has intensified recently, with each side struggling to gain more area under their control. Top military officials in southern Helmand province have urged the residents of the city of Lashkargah to evacuate their houses. Reports say Afghan forces are planning to launch a heavy attack on Taliban inside the city of Lashkargah, who use residences of locals as human shields.
We had announced that if a single Talib arrives in Lashkargah city, he will be killed. Even if 1,000 of them arrive, we will kill them all. This fight is not ours. They are Takfiris and slaves of Punjabis. They aren't Afghans. Our fight against them is a pure jihad, and we will continue this holy jihad with a strong will.
Taliban has in recent weeks launched more attacks on provincial capitals, mainly in southern and western Afghanistan. This comes as many have believed neither the government nor the Taliban will achieve their goals to take full control of the country via insisting on further war. They say negotiation is the only solution to resolve the conflicts.
Today, the ancient city of Herat is under attack, and the war has reached inside people's houses in Lashkargah of Helmand. Meanwhile, violence is spreading across the northern Taliban city and other areas. We still hope to reach peace through responsible moves by the government and Taliban.
Based on official figures, over 1,000 Taliban militants have lost their lives in a series of attacks carried out by Afghan air and ground forces backed by local armed fronts since last week. Afghan forces increased their attacks on Taliban militants and liberated some of lost areas, including Nijrab and Talaobarfak districts in northern and northeastern Afghanistan. Afghan President Ashraf Ghani recently called on the entire nation to establish a united national resistance front against the Taliban. He argues that since the Taliban have put military victory on the top of its priorities list, the time has come to talk to militants with guns and resistance. Sayed Amin Alemi, Kabul.
Fiqh or jurisprudence is an Islamic knowledge and is ranked in
the Holy Prophet of Islam is the example
of
self-purification is the most significant
factor.
Imamat is a living principle in the history of Islam and Shiism.
This is Ulama Speech, the best selection of the speeches of prominent Shia scholars.
In the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Merciful. Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio. Welcome to another episode of Ulama's Speech. In this episode, we invite you to listen to the English translation of a short speech by famous Iranian Shiite orator and lecturer, Hujjatul Islam Ali. Stay tuned.
گفت یار نزدیکتر از من به من است وین عجبتر که من از وی دورم.
In a beautiful Persian poem we read, my beloved is closer to me than myself. Alas, I am far, far away from him. This is exactly how Imam al-Mahdi is close to us and we are far, far from him. He is living with us and he, by the order of Allah, has mastery over us. He is like the greatest spirit of the world. The existence of Imam al-Mahdi is like a spirit in the body of the world and he is seeing everything. Even the tiniest molecules on earth and the heavens are under the mastery of Imam al-Mahdi, and he has this power from Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. Now, one of the duties of Imam al-Mahdi is conveying the blessings of Allah to the world. He is capable of doing so because he is the only living direct representative of Allah on earth. He is the source of blessings and mercy of Allah on earth. Thank you very much, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, for listening to this episode of Ulama's Speech, which was the English translation of a short speech by Hujjatul Islam Ali. To find out more about this program, log on to our website, parstoday.com, Call of Islam page. We leave you in Allah's care. Fi amanallah.
If you're interested to know about history, culture, family, politics, religion, art, etc.,
you wouldn't want to miss the chance to tune into the IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/EN.
In the limelight.
We're going to have to be comfortable with the idea that COVID-19 will be one of the many viruses that circulate. We're prepared for an article written by Shabir Mavi, Dean, Faculty of Health Sciences and Professor of Vaccinology at the University of Witwatersrand in South Africa. The piece is titled, Why Herd Immunity Isn't Going to Happen. The story has appeared on the conservation website. This article has appeared on the Conversation website. Any notion that COVID-19 was going to last for only a few months was very much misplaced in 2020, especially after it was recognized that the SARS-CoV-2 virus was largely spread through the airborne route. All indications were that it would cause repeat bouts of waves. This is what happened in the flu epidemic of 1918. In addition, very few scientists predicted that we would see the type of mutations that occurred over such a short period of time. This has resulted in the virus becoming both more transmissible and more able to evade immune responses. The evolution of the virus has been so rapid that the Delta variant, which is now dominating the world, is at least twice as transmissible as the ancestral virus that was circulating. What this means is that herd immunity is no longer a discussion the world should be having. We should start to avoid using that term in the context of SARS-CoV-2 because it's not going to materialize, or is unlikely to materialize during our lifetimes. When politicians and others speak about herd immunity, unfortunately, they are under the misconception that the current tools we have are adequate to eliminate the virus. It's not what we have at hand right now. Instead, we should be talking about how to live with the virus. The tremendous success that's materialized with COVID-19 vaccines allows us to do this without actually getting into the herd immunity threshold. The peddling the concept of herd immunity creates a misconception that we're actually going to get to a stage where this virus is going to be eliminated. That's unlikely to happen. It will continue circulating. There are a number of dangers in continuing to make people believe it's possible. Firstly, it could dent confidence in vaccines. Even if South Africa gets to its target of 67% of the population being vaccinated, as set out by the Department of Health, there will still be outbreaks of COVID-19. The result will be that people begin to doubt the benefits of being vaccinated. Also, for the now dominant Delta variant, immunity against infection, not only COVID-19 illness, would need to be closer to 84% for the herd immunity threshold to be reached. Secondly, failing to face up to the reality that herd immunity can't be achieved will mean that countries like South Africa will continue to believe that ongoing restrictions will get them there. That will compromise the lives of people on multiple fronts, including education and livelihoods. Herd immunity is when someone infected by the virus won't, on average, infect another person. So you reach a state where the immunity in the population against infection by the virus is such that there are too few people in the environment for sustained onward transmission to take place on others. This is because they've developed immunity against being infected, or at least have developed immunity to the extent where even if they were infected, they would be able to clear the virus very quickly and wouldn't be able to transmit it to other people. So herd immunity essentially means that you have brought about an absolute interruption in the chain of transmission of the virus in the population in the absence of other interventions that too could interrupt virus transmission, such as wearing face masks. But some changes have forced a shift in our thinking about herd immunity. It's now viewed much more as an aspiration rather than an actual goal. Firstly, the evolution of the virus and the mutations that have occurred. One set of mutations made the virus much more transmissible or infectious. The Delta variant is just such an example. Initially, we thought the SARS-CoV-2 reproductive rate was between 2.5 and 4. In other words, in a fully susceptible population, every one person infected would on average infect about 2.5 to 4 other people. But the Delta variant is at least twofold more transmissible. That means that the reproductive rate of the Delta variant is probably closer to 6 rather than 3. The second change is that the virus has shown an ability to have mutations that make it resistant to antibody neutralizing activity induced by past infection from the original virus, as well as antibody responses induced by most of the current COVID-19 vaccines. The third big issue centers on the durability of protection. Our memory responses are lasting for at least 6 to 9 months at the moment, but that doesn't mean that they will protect us against infection from variants that are evolving, even if such memory responses do assist in attenuating the clinical course of the infection, leading to less severe COVID-19. The fourth issue, conspiring against us being able to reach a herd immunity threshold anytime soon, is the inequitable distribution of vaccines across the world, the slow uptake and the sluggish rollout. Unfortunately, this provides fertile ground for the ongoing evolution of the coronavirus. No country is going to lock its borders perpetually. This means the entire global population needs to reach the same sort of threshold around about the same time. At the moment, only 1% of the populations of low-income countries have been vaccinated, and 27% of the global population has been vaccinated. With the Delta variant, we would need to get close to 84% of the global population developing protection against infection in the absence of non-pharmacological interventions in as brief a period of time as possible. The only sustainable solution is to learn to live with the virus. This will require ensuring that we get the majority of individuals, especially adults, and particularly those at a higher risk of developing severe COVID-19 and dying, vaccinated as quickly as possible. In my view, this could be achieved in South Africa with 20 million people vaccinated, not the 40 million target set by the government. But the 20 million would need to include 90% of people above the age of 60 and 90% of people above the age of 35 who have comorbidities. If South Africa achieves this milestone, it could get back to a relatively normal lifestyle, even with the virus continuing to circulate and causing the occasional outbreak. It would also ensure a threshold that guaranteed its healthcare systems weren't going to be overwhelmed and that people were not going to die in large numbers. We are simply going to have to become comfortable with the idea that SARS-CoV-2 is going to be like one of the numerous other viruses that circulate that cause respiratory illness each day. Usually mild infections and less often a severe disease. So people will unfortunately continue dying of COVID-19, but certainly not at the magnitude that's been seen over the past 18 months. A major advance would be for COVID-19 to be no more severe than what is seen every influenza season, 10,000 to 11,000 deaths in South Africa. The British experience is where we should be heading, that is, getting back to a relatively normal lifestyle, provided that we have an adequate number of people vaccinated, and particularly people who are at higher risk of developing severe COVID-19. The United Kingdom is now close to 85% of adults that have already received at least a single dose of the vaccine. As a result, they're able to remove almost all restrictions. The United Kingdom is seeing an increase in the number of cases of the Delta variant of the coronavirus, but they've seen very nominal changes when it comes to hospitalization and death. The vast majority of people, 97%, who still end up being hospitalized are dying of COVID-19 in the United Kingdom are those who decided not to be vaccinated.
This is A to Z. An introduction to Islamic lifestyle. Today's lesson, Revive the Spirit of Quran. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. In the name of Allah, the most beneficent, the most merciful. In earlier times, Quran was a book of guidance for people. But now, it has been turned into a book of pride. Today, we need to once again make the Quran a book of guidance for ourselves. This requires Muslims to revise the policies and activities in which they are currently engaged. In the madrasas and mosques, for instance, sermons given are generally centered on the form of religion. In Muslim congregations, it is only the form or the outward aspects of religion that is discussed. We have to return to the original spirit of Islam. This can be understood from a saying of Holy Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wasallam. The Prophet is reported to have said that in later times, mosques would be full of worshippers but devoid of guidance. This means in the later period of Islam, people will perform all rituals associated with religion, but their worship would lack inner spirit. instead of focusing on reviving the spirit of Islam in individual believers, present-day Muslims only speak about working towards gaining political power, which they think is the solution for bringing about a change. Political power is important in Islam, but with its Islamic spirit. The worship of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala is important in Islam, but with its proper spirit. And similarly, Quran is a source of pride for Muslims, but what is more important is the spirit of Quran. Welcome back, dear listeners. Today we are discussing reviving the spirit of Holy Quran. Quran is there. We love Quran. We read Quran. We respect Quran. But do we try to keep alive the spirit of Quran? Is a million-dollar question for all of us. A brief glance over history would be enough to provide sufficient proof of the claim that there has been no such book that has ever influenced human societies to the magnitude of the Quran. It is for the same reason that the Quran automatically steps into the precincts of sociological discussions and becomes the elemental constituent of the subjects of research in this discipline. This means that any deep study and profound research in the field of world history of the last 1400 years is impossible without the knowledge of the Holy Quran. If you want to research and have a proper perspective, have a proper vision of what humanity is all about, of what the creation of Allah is all about, of what this universe is all about, you need Quran for that. Quran is that absolute truth that takes you closer to the realities of this world. So no matter what you want to study, you need Quran for that. You know, in order to get to those higher levels of understanding. Yes, you can have a superficial understanding of any sciences without Quran, even Islamic sciences. But you need Holy Quran to take you to that higher level of understanding of all of those knowledges and sciences. So keep in mind, stay connected to the Holy Quran. It is here to guide us. Dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, thank you very much for staying with us till the end of today's episode of A to Z. Don't forget to log on to our website at www.parstoday.com, Call of Islam page. We leave you all in the care of Allah. Till next time, wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.